I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today, Henry Lowendorf joins me on the show. Henry is the chair of the Greater New Haven Peace Council and has been involved, along with members of other groups, in putting together a bill that is now working its way through the Connecticut state legislature. The bill would create a pathway to economic conversion through what is called a futures commission. But I'm going to ask Henry to tell you more about this exciting new Senate bill, SB 619. Henry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the economic conversion that you've been working on and then the Futures Commission, what that all means?
Sure. The Futures Commission, let me just start with that and then I'll back up and give a bit of a chronology. The Futures Commission is a bill that was submitted by Senator Tony Harp, the New Haven senator, in the state legislature. And it's basically a bill that asks the state to create a commission to look at how to maintain and develop production jobs, manufacturing jobs, in the state of Connecticut by, in particular, moving production away from the building of weapons, of killing machines, to building green civilian use products. This commission is intended to look at the existing manufacturing base in Connecticut, but not limited to that, so it can look beyond that. But right now, a lot of manufacturing in Connecticut is based on building weaponry for the Pentagon. We build jet engines, we build helicopters used for military, we build nuclear submarines that have no other than a military use. And the Peace Council, the New Haven Peace Council, and an organization called No Nukes, No War, Connecticut, have joined with the labor movement, in particular the state AFL-CIO and the Machinists Union, to look at how do we move from weapons building to civilian building. And the machinists know very well that the number of machinists in the industries that build weaponry have decreased dramatically over the last 25 years. The numbers have fallen, and they see with sequester, the federal government's reduction of spending, and other reductions that will be made to the Pentagon, that the number of manufacturing jobs for their members will decrease. And so they see it as a way to guarantee jobs, ultimately, for their members. We agree with that. We don't want anyone to lose a job. But in addition, we see it as a way to start moving our economy from spending so many of our resources, so much of our wealth on building killing machines, to starting to build more and more things that we need. Wind turbines, double-hulled tankers, high-speed trains, things that will really help the economy. So that's what this commission is about. In the 1980s, there was a very powerful movement in this country seeing and hoping for the end of the Cold War to convert our military industries into civilian production. And nationally, that was led by not only the peace movement, but by the International Association of Machinists, the same union that is supporting our Futures Commission in Connecticut. It was led at the time by the president, international president of the machinists, William Wimpersinger. When the Soviet Union demised in the early 90s, and there was a hope for a peace dividend, that effort ended. They had made some progress. The progress went as far as cutting a large check by the state of Connecticut to one of the military industries, asking it to investigate what can you build besides killing machines. And rather than taking the money and doing that investigation, the company said, no, we're not interested in that. We would rather take Pentagon money where we have guaranteed profits. No matter what we build, we will have guaranteed profits. And we don't have any competition. So they tore up the check. That movement just dissipated over the course of the 90s. And we started rebuilding it in the last 5 or 6 years. In 2009, a number of peace organizations organized a conference at the University of Connecticut on conversion. How do we do this? And there were a number of state representatives, first selectmen, members of unions, there were a solar panel company and so forth, discussing what we could do and how we could do it. And a proposal was made by one of the leaders of the state legislature, Denise Merrill, that a commission be created to investigate this. And we thought that was a very good idea in 2009. But in 2010, she ran for the Secretary of the State. She eventually won, and she's now in that office. And so it took us a while to get to coming back to this commission. We proposed this to Senator Harp last fall, and she said, write something up, which we did, to describe what we were trying to accomplish. And she took what we wrote and condensed it into this proposal for a futures commission. That proposal was submitted to the state legislature. It went to the Commerce Committee. Commerce Committee had hearings. Members of the peace community and the organized labor testified, as well as did Senator Harp, at that hearing. And out of that came the draft of the bill SB 619 that calls for this futures commission. Briefly, that's how this came about.
Well, that really sounds like a win-win situation, allowing us to cut our war budget and stop making killing machines.
And also create jobs that would benefit the state and the infrastructure. It sounds like a wonderful idea. It reminds me of a little bit of in the movie Why We Fight, where Eisenhower's warning about the military-industrial complex.
And how we used to not have a standing military or weapons manufacturers. And when we had a war, factories were converted to making the guns and bombs, etc. And when the war was over, the factories converted back to making the non-military products again, and the soldiers became civilians again. But at some point that changed, and we've arrived at the ugly place we are today, where we have giant corporations manufacturing weapons and feeding off of unending government contracts and endless wars.
And I think the people in the military-industrial complex have been smart enough to put these factories in almost every state making weapons for the military, working with the Pentagon, so that they're constantly funded because nobody wants to lose the jobs in their states. So this sounds like an excellent way to change that. And how much of our federal budget is spent on the military?
The federal budget is a bit confusing. The Congress and the president vote every year on what is called discretionary spending. That is what they can do with our federal taxes. Some of the spending isn't discretionary. It fits in trust funds, and it fits in, for example, Social Security has its own trust fund. In the 1960s, in order to hide the amount of money that was being spent then on building the war on Vietnam, President Lyndon Johnson combined Social Security with the discretionary budget to hide the amount that was spent on war. We take that apart and look at the discretionary spending, the amount that goes to all sorts of different categories. And in that budget, defense spending is 57%. That is, it's almost $6 out of every $10 that goes into making war. As a comparison, 6% goes into education. 1% goes to food. Healthcare gets 5%. Transportation gets 2%. Veterans benefits 5%. War gets 57%. So it's the greatest part of the budget. And not only that, but it's obviously more than half.
Wow, it's really amazing, those figures. Yeah. And then when they say that they don't have enough money and they want to cut Social Security or Medicare.
Well, there are several complications that are injected, I think, to confuse people. As I said, Social Security has its own trust fund. When our government, both the executive branch and the legislative branch want to cut the deficit, there's no reason they should talk about Social Security. Social Security has not added one dime to the deficit. So it shouldn't even be part of the conversation. But since there are people in this country who want to cut Social Security for ideological reasons and for reasons of making the Wall Street brokers even richer, because if Social Security is privatized, that money will go, they hope, into stocks and bonds. So you have a reason for wanting to bring Social Security into the discussion. It shouldn't be in the discussion. But when there's cutting to be done, even a small fraction of the Pentagon's budget being cut is much more than many of these different programs that are essential for the life of our community. If you just take one example, last year, the people of New Haven paid income taxes, and almost $41 million of our income taxes was used to pay for one war. That was the war on Afghanistan. The money we spent with our troops in Afghanistan, all the materials and everything else, from New Haven was $41 million. We could have, if that $41 million were spent on things that we need in the city, we could have paid for 164 firefighters and 145 police officers and 163 elementary school teachers for that year. In other words, much of the budget of New Haven could have been covered by the money that the United States spent from New Haven taxpayers on one war. And of course, the cost of that war is only a small fraction of the total Pentagon budget.
Now, so this bill that you're involved with, this economic conversion bill, it's passed the Senate, and now it's going to the House, the state House. And do you know where it's at there or what's happening at the moment with it?
We're trying to find that out, and we're aware that the Speaker of the House, Brendan Sharkey, has the decision of when to bring this bill forward, or even if to bring the bill forward. So we're asking people to support this bill, people who support this bill, one, to contact their state representative and ask them to support the bill, but also to contact Representative Sharkey and ask him to bring this out and bring it forward so that it can be voted on. It won overwhelmingly in the Senate. There were, I think, two people opposed and one not present. So it really got strong support. And it should, because what we're talking about is something that a lot of people are talking about, jobs, maintaining and creating jobs, and beyond that, maintaining and creating manufacturing jobs, something that we've been losing at record levels. So, and these manufacturing jobs generally are well paid, they have good benefits, they're union jobs, they're the kind of jobs that people aspire to because they can support a family, they can help you to buy a house, they can help you to send your kids to school. You don't have to have food stamps, you don't have to have a second or third job, as many of the new jobs that are being created are forcing people to do.
And if this commission gets passed, if this bill gets passed, who would serve on it?
The commission would have a number of appointments, and the appointments would come from different sectors. So there would be people from education and business and science and engineering. There would also be a number of people from labor, from the peace movement, and from the environmental movement. We wanted to make sure that there were a number of labor representatives on this commission, and we also wanted to make sure that the peace movement and the environmental movement were both represented. Peace movement, because it's critical for us that we move the money from jobs that are building killing machines to jobs that are building what society needs. We need to rebuild much of the infrastructure of this country, and we need to build it in a green way, for reasons that are well known, or should be. But we also want the environmental movement involved because there are people within the environmental movement who have special knowledge and realize and have good ways of asking questions about what would be sustainable manufacturing. And the labor people, obviously, because they have experience in manufacturing. One of the meetings that I attended a couple of years ago was led by people from the Machinist Union, And I asked them, what can you build in these factories that are now building war materials? And the answer was anything made out of metal or fiberglass. And I interpret that even more broadly. Practically anything that has a physical dimension they can build. That means that it's wide open, but they can manufacture. And the wonderful thing about that is that not only do we have the capability of building these whatever products we need, but we also have huge needs in this country.
Now, Henry, are we the only state we're doing this, or is this being done in other states also?
Actually, it's exciting for Connecticut because I think this is the first effort that's being made in the whole country. And once the bill passed the Senate, we started receiving national attention, primarily at this point by people who are engaged in the peace movement, people who are concerned about economic conversion from an old economy, a 19th and 20th century economy, to a 21st century economy, where we have to cut our use of fossil fuels. We have to cut our use of materials and build things much more efficiently and use energy far more efficiently and using energy sources that aren't going to destroy the climate.
It sounds like a really, as I said, a win-win situation for everybody if this were to pass. And it would make Connecticut a leader across the nation in this kind of a movement. That sounds really wonderful. What can people do if they're interested in getting involved in this or helping out?
Well, there are a number of things that people can do. I already suggested call your state representative. Everybody has one state representative in the state. And there's the website where you can find your state representative, which is www.cga.ct.gov. And you can write down your street address and get the contact information for your state representative if you don't know that person. So that's one thing, is to contact that person and say, this is a win-win. We need to support this. We need to make sure that commission has really representative people on it, people from the different sectors. And that's included in the bill so far. Beyond that, people need to, I think, really need to start looking at where their tax dollars go. They need to participate in peace activities because it's the peace movement in the United States and around the world that is saying move the money from spending so much on war to what we need in the world. We don't need all of these killing machines. There are no enemies sufficient for the use of them. Even the Pentagon says that many of these machines, much of this production is wasted. It's way overblown in terms of price. And the Pentagon, when it tries to cut back, and it doesn't do very much of it, but when it does try, as you pointed out earlier, members of Congress push back because they see it as a jobs program. We have seen this in Connecticut. Whenever we raise the issue of conversion, because we don't say just cut the military, well, we do say that, but we don't just say that. We say cut the military and use that money to create jobs where we need them. We get a cold shoulder. We don't get a response. It's like our representatives are allergic to the idea. And I think the problem is that they don't look more broadly at it. I could be wrong. I don't know exactly why they don't. They don't want to talk about it. It is a jobs program. Every congressional district has war-related jobs, and this country desperately needs to create jobs. So they don't want to lose jobs. We don't want to lose jobs either. We're not in the business of creating more unemployment. To the contrary, the amount of money that's spent on building weaponry can be spent on building housing, could be spent on building efficient energy-producing equipment, can be built on transportation and so forth. And if you weren't spending it on that, you'd get more jobs, more high-quality, high-paying jobs in education or healthcare than you get in the military industries. We're focusing, in this case, not on trying to get machinists to become healthcare workers, but rather to keep machinists and electricians and plumbers, people who are working in these industries. They've got terrific skills. They're wonderful skills, highly skilled people. Keep them doing, using those skills, but instead of building nuclear submarines, instead of building jet engines for fighters, build things that the civilian economy needs. And it will build the economy, the best thing you can hope for a nuclear submarine, that it'll die of old age, that it won't be used in terms of war. If you build a train, it gets used. You want it to be used. It's moving people around. It's moving freight around. It's adding to the economy. A nuclear weapon, a bomber, they add much less to the economy, and there are economic analyses that say they actually subtract from the economy.
Is there an opposition to this bill? I mean, are there lobbyists opposing this bill, or how are the defense contractors in Connecticut, like Pratt & Whitney, responding to this bill?
It's a good question. We haven't heard anything yet. We may, if the bill actually gets passed and gets significant amount of publicity, we may see some opposition. It hasn't gotten much publicity. I don't know what we can do. We've announced it. Senator Harp's office and the New Haven delegation sent out a news release saying it passed the Senate and the next stage is the House. And then it would have to be signed by Governor Malloy. And then the commission has to be formed and it has to meet and it has to go through the process of investigation and figuring out what are the ways, how do we do this. I don't think it's straightforward. I think it's going to be an interesting and complicated effort.
Right, but well worth the effort. If we only make war materials, we're always going to have wars. I really appreciate your efforts in getting this bill passed. Do we know where Speaker of the House Sharkey or
Governor Malloy, where they stand on this bill?
I don't yet. We are in the process of trying to set up a meeting with Speaker Sharkey, and we haven't reached out to Governor Malloy at this point. Because of the overwhelming support in the Senate, and it's not clear to me all the reasons that people have different reasons for voting for these things. But as you point out, it looks like a win-win effort. And so if people see that it's a win-win effort, they'll support it, that there's no reason to oppose it.
And do you know when the vote will be in the House on this?
No, that's what we're pursuing. We want to make sure there is a vote. We want to make sure there is a discussion about it, that this comes forward. That's the reason we would like to meet with the speakers.
You are a member of the Greater New Haven Peace Council, which is part of the U.S. Peace Council. And I'm wondering if you can tell people a little bit about the U.S. Peace Council, the Greater New Haven Peace Council, and how they can, if there's a website or if they want to be involved in that, how to do that.
Yes, I'm happy to do that. We do have a website. It's uspeacecouncil.org. And the U.S. Peace Council is about 30 years old or so. 30, 35 years old, and it's a member of the World Peace Council, which is probably the largest peace organization in the world, which has affiliates in many countries throughout the world. The U.S. Peace Council is a peace organization that understands and looks at peace in a very broad sense. It looks at peace as connected with justice. It looks at peace in terms of how wars are started and who benefits from wars, and it looks at war and peace in the interconnectedness of wars. So, for example, we see the war on Iraq as not separate from the effort of the United States to overthrow the government of Libya or Syria or Iran or Afghanistan, or the effort that the United States made and succeeded in overthrowing the government of Iran in 1953, or Guatemala a few years later, or its manipulation to prevent the elections in Vietnam in the 1950s. We see all of these wars as connected to the overthrow of the democratically elected government of Chile in 1973, or of the war in the 1980s, the Contra War that the United States funded and supplied with arms and intelligence to overthrow the democratically elected government of Nicaragua. And I could go on and on. There's a huge list of governments and countries that have been attacked by the United States over the last many years to install people who, rather than supporting the needs of their own citizens, support the needs of the big corporations. Many people in this country understand that George Bush and his administration insisted on invading Iraq, not because there were weapons of mass destruction, because the evidence was against it at the time. And millions of people knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction, but rather that country was invaded because the government of Iraq and the people of Iraq owned the oil resources of Iraq. It wasn't, those resources weren't owned by private corporations, in particular U.S.-based corporations. And that has changed since we invaded Iraq, and quietly, most people aren't aware that much of the oil industry in Iraq has been privatized so that these international oil companies now have access to that oil at prices that benefit them.
And my understanding is that almost everything in Iraq has been privatized. Things that the government used to do have now been privatized. Henry, we're almost out of time. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to share with the listeners before we end for today?
Well, I think it's important to know that we can avoid future wars. We can avoid future wars by realizing that they're connected to the previous wars and they're connected to the desire to control resources and people. We can avoid a war on Iran, for example. There's all this war fever to attack Iran. The fact is that the nuclear threat in the Middle East doesn't come from Iran because Iran, acknowledged by all of the intelligence agencies, does not have nuclear weapons. There are two countries that do have nuclear weapons in the Middle East. One of them is Israel, and the other is the United States. That's where the nuclear threat comes from. If the United States and the rest of the world want to avoid a war and want to get rid of the nuclear weapons, it should be done evenly. It should be done universally. And they can do that because there's been a proposal from the United Nations, which United States and Israel and all the other countries endorsed, to have a conference that would create a Middle East zone free of nuclear weapons. That conference was supposed to be held last December in Helsinki, Finland, and the United States unilaterally called it off. That, people should know, it's the United States that is preventing a nuclear weapons-free Middle East. We can change that. What we have to do is put pressure on our government. And we can stop a war before it starts, I think, if we manage to move in that direction.
Yeah, it involves putting a lot of pressure on the government because Iran has a lot of mineral wealth, oil wealth. They have a central bank, their own bank. They're not into the privatized bank system. And I think have other reasons for going in there. It has nothing to do with the nuclear piece. But
if Iran had no nuclear power program, which, by the way, was started under our dictator, the Shah, if they had no nuclear power program, we would find another reason. Iran is one of the last countries in the Middle East that doesn't have U.S. military bases. It has oil that doesn't belong to the giant oil corporations based in the United States. As far as these corporations are concerned, that's not allowed. The Iranians cannot own their own oil. That has to belong to these corporations. They want to control the oil. They want to control oil that goes to Europe. They want to control oil that goes to China and India and so forth. The way they feel they can do that is by overthrowing a government in Iran.
Henry, I really want to thank you for being on the show today and for all the work that you've done for this economic conversion bill. And I hope all our listeners will get active and call their representatives on that and ask them to support that bill. Thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl.
You've just been listening to an interview with Henry Lowendorf of the Greater New Haven Peace Council discussing the Futures Commission bill, Senate Bill 619, which passed the Senate overwhelmingly last week and is now in the Connecticut House. The day after doing this interview, I received an email from Henry saying that the Futures Commission bill will come up for a vote in the House this week. So please call your Connecticut state representatives and ask them to support this bill, Senate Bill 619. And again, the website to find the contact information for your state rep is www.cga, for Connecticut General Assembly, so www.cga.ct.gov. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.